This either is, has been, or will be a Krypton Radio production as soon as we can get the TARDIS working properly to figure out which one it is!
The Mark of the Corsair, fantastic bloke. He had that snake as a tattoo in every regeneration. Didn't feel like himself unless he had the tattoo or herself a couple of times. Ooh, she was a bad girl!
And so are we! What are we? Well, I have no idea. Do you know what we are or what we're doing there, awful husband?
Well, I'm still tail spinning. Oh, wait a minute. That was the last episode.
Oh, God. Okay. You are still completely ponified.
Yes, I am.
Ponies on the brain. We're going to have to convert part
of the... I'm still going through the marathon.
Yes, we still will have to convert part of the TARDIS into stables, and I'm really concerned about this. Okay, well, me being the concerned one, I am the time siren.
And I'm the awful husband.
That is, yes, the...
No, I'm not being a pony.
When you're not being a tail weaver. Okay, I don't... That's it. I'm going to have to learn how to build four legs into a costume. I'm very concerned. Okay, so we are actually waiting for Madwoman here. She's gotten stuck in a room, and I think the Corsair is trying to get her out. You would think he or she would be using a crowbar, but no, for some reason. I saw her walking down the hallway of the Cantor Raid, so I think she accidentally ended up in an arboretum with a bug problem.
Remember last week when she locked herself in her room because it was the end of the Matt Smith
era? I could not forget that, yes.
Well, I think she lost the key, so she can't get out.
Yeah, either that or the Corsair hit it because she got sick of all
the whining,
you know,
and moaning, yeah.
Yes.
That was coming over the intercom.
Yes, which is part of the problem I have with yesterday's episode, or yesterday according to our time stream, was the first episode of the Capaldi era.
Yay!
For Doctor Who.
And it's not a split season. I'm just as excited about that.
Yes. So, for this epic review, we have on a dear friend from a few Gallifreys here and there. She has been seen wandering around in the guise of a TARDIS. And she's known for organizing wonderful groups of TARDIS cosplay herds of people. And her name is Neo-Whovian, a.k.a. Marsha!
Hi, Marsha!
Hi, Marsha!
Slight correction, it's actually Michelle who's in charge of the group cosplay, but I pull in people elsewhere where I can.
Yeah, but you know, we kind of know you as the face of it because I loved your costume, and I loved the little light on the top, whether it worked or not, didn't care, the costume is still amazing.
Yeah.
Yes, and you got us into the photograph session with Sylvester McCoy, or at least we heard about it from you. You are still, as far as we're concerned, made of awesome.
And I am just amazed at all the variations of a costume of an inanimate object. You guys are awesome just to do that.
Yes, yes, we've been seeing some interesting stuff. So, Marsha, I want to ask you, there was a pre-show to the episode. Now, I'm taking it. You saw it on BBC. Did you see the pre-show stuff?
I did not.
Okay, because we taped it. I wish I could send it over to you. You know, I'm sure it's probably on YouTube out there somewhere.
Probably.
But it had Chris Hardwick along with Will Wheaton.
Ah.
And Will had on like a, you know, he looked very corporate. He had a suit. You know, which is scary for a fan. And he was hiding that amazing tattoo of the octopus on his forearm, which seeing him in that and a utility kilt at Day of the TARDIS in Burbank was really cool.
He has become an all new level of awesome.
Yeah, he has. He has. And it was very funny because Hardwick's show is about 15 minutes. And they were monitoring tweets at the time. And when they came back from a commercial break, Hardwick was going, "Oh, great. Now you guys are turning belligerent. Now you're saying, you know, get out of the way. Get off the stage. We want to see Capaldi's." They're both like, "Whoa, okay. You guys are like, we better get out of here. You're going to stomp right over us.
We're not here to see you."
Yeah, exactly. But if you can catch it, Marsha, it was pretty darn funny. And there was a show after, which BBC pulled a dirty trick. They showed Intruders after the Doctor Who episode, and then they showed the post-Hardwick piece with Mark Gatiss. And I have an issue with that because Intruders was awful. I hated it.
Well, it's an old trick that the networks use. You introduce a new show right after a big hit, so the audience stays around.
Yeah, and we didn't.
But we didn't.
Sorry, I have a thing called the DVR, and you were not the boss of me. Okay, so that's how we looked at it, and it just, I mean, we went through like a half hour of it, And my sister called, and she and her daughter and the awful husband and I were talking about our opinions on Doctor Who. And I came back and I asked my house guest, I asked April, I said, okay, so what did we miss? And she said, oh, more of this.
Which is a bunch of confusions.
Yeah, so that's not a good sign, yeah, for a show. And it's a shame. I mean, I was watching it because John Sim was in there, and I thought, hey, you know.
The Master.
If I can get the Master out of my head and see his acting ability beyond that, you know, it would be pretty cool. But he didn't have much material to work with.
Well, you know, it was worth giving him a chance. We gave it to him, and I think that was about it.
Yeah, but you know what? It wasn't his fault. I mean, if you've got a crap script.
I know.
Come on. It's the, not his fault. Brilliant person.
I'll watch
can fall
something he comes else on, you know.
Yeah.
Just not that.
Yeah. But, okay, so nobody wants to hear about intruders. We want to get straight to the Capaldi era here. So are we going to flip a coin? Are we going to go alphabetical or...
Well, she's a guest. Let her just start.
Okay. I think that's a very good idea. Okay, Marcia, let it rip.
You want my general opinion of the entire episode?
Whatever you want to give it in whatever format, just tell us how you're seeing it.
Okay. Well... Let me start out by saying I loved Capaldi. I liked Clara's character better than I have in the past, though there were still problems. I still have a lot of problems with the Paternoster Gang, although I love each of the characters individually. There are some serious problems with, among other things, their relationships. And it was what I would call a typical Moffat episode in that the first time through it was whirlwind and fun and I came out of it really enjoying it, and then the more I sat back and thought about it, the less I liked it. And the second time through, again, I had some serious issues with the plot being a very Moffat plot.
Okay, can you describe what you consider a Moffatistic plot?
Well, I don't want to be rude about it, but basically it seems to me that Moffat has three good ideas.
Okay.
And he continues to use them over and over until they're not good ideas anymore. And he even sort of made fun of it himself in the way... he had the Doctor's dialogue go, let's see, I've seen this before somewhere. I just can't put my finger on it. What's going on here? And basically, it's a rehashed plot.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he didn't even bother to disguise that, in fact, drew attention to it in the dialogue, did not make it any better. For me.
Yeah, I can see that. Okay.
And actually, you had mentioned, you sent out a tweet with a link to an article that you said kind of matched your opinion. And I have to say, I hadn't noticed this exact parallel, but when I glanced through that article, it was exactly right. Holding your breath and not blinking are pretty much the same thing. So can we rehash any ideas any more than we already have? I don't know. I'm sure he's got something else. He'll have another kid in a gas mask pretty soon. Who knows?
Yeah. That actually didn't bother me because I was in the moment of it, I guess, which is a good thing. He'll probably depend on how people aren't going to draw a parallel. I didn't really see a parallel because... If there's a way to fight a monster, then, you know, if it's a different monster, then, you know, I'm all for it. You know, go ahead and use it. He had to set up a way that, I guess, Clara could... Oh, by the way, people, spoilers!
A little late here.
Oh, well. we'll put that in really big print. It's not the blinking, but... Yeah, I mean, there are certain ways to fight certain monsters. You use that to your advantage. You know, to me, it's like saying, okay, to, you know, kill a certain animal, you hit it with a stick. Okay, you got a different animal over here. You're going to, you know, hit it with a rock or a brick, and people are going to go, "Oh, it's the stick analogy." So, I guess
yes, to a certain extent, there are only so many ways you can defeat a monster, but the fact that it is requiring someone to refrain from an involuntary bodily function. Or at least what is usually an involuntary bodily function.
Yeah,
breathing, blinking.
Yeah,
there's a parallel there. That again, the first time through, I didn't really notice that. And in fact, as I said, I didn't notice it that till I read through the article. But the fact that he's used the same exact body horror with the same clockwork robots—they don't look the same, but effectively the same. They came from the same place. They came from the sister ship. Who writes sister ship of on their parts, on their hardware for their ship? Who writes the name of the ship and sister ship of on? Anyway, that's a different
nitpick. Oh, did they show that? I actually missed that part.
Yes, he takes the fuse or whatever it is with the blood vessel out of it.
Uh-huh.
And he's talking about, let's see, SS Marie Antoinette. And I didn't catch this the first time through. It's in the dialogue, but on the second time through, I noticed it's actually printed on there. It says SS Marie Antoinette. And then under it in smaller letters, it says sistership of the SS Madame de Pompadour. It's like, who actually prints that on the hardware?
Yeah, that kind of...
Again, that's a teeny tiny little nitpick, but it added to the over-the-top, you're reusing this crap.
The general irritation. Line. Yeah, that's kind of almost insulting. That's kind of assuming a level of stupidity on the part of the audience. He could have just made that, you know, verbal observation of, oh... Do you happen to know a ship called the, you know, Madame de Pompadour? And he could have, and the android could have provided that.
Yeah, except the joke was that the doctor wasn't figuring out where it came from, so we had to hammer it at the audience. That's one of the things that often irritates me about Moffat, is that either he thinks, oh, the audience is clever, they'll figure this out, I don't have to explain stuff, that really kind of needs to be explained, or else he like over explains things. It's hard for him to find that sweet spot, in my opinion.
Yeah, he sometimes he gets it, sometimes he doesn't. I personally think he's just been doing Who too long and needs a long vacation, but
I would like to see a change of showrunners.
Thank you. The first opinion of somebody I know that's kind of in solidarity to myself. So what else did you observe about this that you either liked or irritated the heck out of you?
Gosh, there are so many little things. I really liked a lot of Capaldi's mannerisms. That I liked the classic looking at your own face kind of thing, but look at these eyebrows. You could open bottles with these eyebrows.
Yeah, that was a weird turn of phrase. I didn't quite understand that.
Oh, well, a bottle opener. You know what? If you've got, like, a bottle of beer with the lid that isn't a screw-on and you have to use a bottle opener, like, that's attached to the side of your cabinet or whatever.
Oh, like the old-fashioned ones I had growing up. It's like a little triangle of metal. Yeah.
Right, so his eyebrows are so prominent that you could use them to open a bottle.
That was
the idea.
That kind of fell flat.
Oh, I caught that and I enjoyed it. almost everything with Capaldi I really adored. I thought the bit where he was like, calling the dinosaur a sexy woman was too much. It was still too Matt Smith, but maybe that was because it was early enough on. I can sweep it under the rug and say that was kind of the regeneration transition. He wasn't fully this new persona yet.
Yeah, that might have been backed up by the fact he did an Amy reference.
Yeah, that was kind of amusing. I liked little things like Maeve McIntosh, who plays Madame Vastra, having a chance to use her own natural Scottish accent for just a smidge of that one scene. You know, little details here and there that were awesome. And like I said, generally speaking, I loved Capaldi. I liked how Clara drew on her experience as a teacher to face down the half-faced man. Although the way that flashback, I shouldn't go into that. That's a writer thing.
Hey, you're entitled. You're entitled.
As a writer, I noticed this difficult narrative issue that he's trying to do, and I don't think it's well done, but I can't think of a better way to do it. And anyway, the thing that bothered me most was the relationship between Vastra and Jenny as it was shown. I love those two characters. I love that they're a couple. I had no problem with the kiss, which apparently some people out there are up in arms about. I didn't even think about it. It's just another kiss until I saw a few things in Twitter. And actually one of my friends being like, stop complaining about the lesbian kiss. And I was like, oh, wait, yeah, I guess there was.
You know what? It isn't
kissing, as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, it isn't so much a lesbian kiss as an interspecies kiss.
Yes.
And the fact that Vastra has us for lunch, dinner, and breakfast, she's basically, I could get really crass about this, but this is going to be on a family airwaves here, and I could say she's having a dalliance with her own food. I have a bigger issue with that, but it isn't even really an issue.
Yeah,
you know, so that's
that part wasn't what bothered me, but the power differential was much more pronounced this time than it has been before. They talked about it. They're like, "Yes, we pretend that she's my servant, so that, and yet here I am pouring tea in private, and she's kind of complaining about it, and Vastra's poo-pooing it, and then there's all the little bits where." Vastra's clearly like making comments that make you think that she's noticing Clara as an object of desire.
I thought that was off the wall. That was kind of weird.
And then there's the part where Jenny is posing as for a portrait, except there's not actually a portrait being drawn, and it's for art, haha, and it's it bothered me because it was presented as cutesy and funny, except if you changed Vastra into a cisgendered heterosexual white man, it wouldn't be so funny. And so why is it funny if she is a Silurian female instead?
Yeah.
It really bothered me that they would show that kind of that kind of unhealthy relationship in something that was supposed to be so awesome. A lot of things that I really liked and really enjoyed, even past the second time through, and other things that kind of set me on edge. So I'm kind of a mixed bag. I think I liked it more than I disliked it, but it's not a love fest for me.
Yeah. As far as post-regeneration stories, I absolutely nothing to me holds a candle to Matt's regeneration, to the entire 11th hour, set up a fairy tale, it set up very clear relationship with the new companion. You had your bad guy. Yeah, he's a little confused and he gets his, you know, head a little mixed up. But it was very easy to follow. And the problem with this was it was confusing. I mean, yeah, there was weird stuff in there. Like, yeah, Jenny posing. Okay, what does this really got to do with much? And the thing with the dinosaur. I mean, it was hysterical when the dinosaur spit the TARDIS out. I thought that was so funny.
Mm-hmm.
It was really nuts. And it flowed so well. And this just didn't. You had stuff thrown in here. And who wants to see the Doctor dumpster diving for 10 minutes talking to a vagrant about stuff in the garbage? It just was ridiculous to me.
That actually was, in my opinion, that was one of the strongest scenes, because that was about who he is and who he may be. That was the whole, you know, it's my face is fresh on, but it's full of wrinkles. You know, I didn't frown these lines. Who frowned me this face?
Yeah.
And I took that to be a scene that was setting up a longer season arc about why he's wearing this familiar face.
Yeah, because they do say they're going to address that later.
Right. And yeah. The fact that he's showed up before in Pompeii, and I don't know if they're going to address how he was in Children of Earth.
Uh-huh.
As well, but I thought I had read somewhere months ago that Russell T. Davies had an idea for why he would have had both of those faces. So basically,
yeah.
this is a Russell T. Davies storyline getting woven in, as I understand it.
Yeah.
But I actually enjoyed that scene because that was his staring in the mirror looking at his own regeneration scene, as far as I was concerned.
Yeah. I had no problem with the information being delivered on that level. It was just a weird setting. And I, you know, that went into a bigger overall issue with me in that the sound was mixed terribly. My sister complained about it. Her daughter complained about it. I could not hear half of his dialogue, which is why I want to hear it again. And I'm going to look into getting the closed captioning activated on our TV for next week, because it was a horrible mix. And believe me, when I edit these episodes every week, I have to watch that mixing in the end credits. And I know a bad audio when I hear it.
Yeah, I've had that problem with Doctor Who before in the recent years, because Murray Gold writes some good stuff, and it's emotional stuff, and yes, we want to have that undercurrent, but it's supposed to be an undercurrent. I still want to hear the dialogue, and I've had that problem in episodes before where it's hard to hear the dialogue because the music is so loud.
Yeah. Oh, where did you come from? Did you find her?
I found some extra keys.
I locked myself in my room, you know, after the whole Matt Smith thing. I admit I was having a bit of a tantrum. And then I couldn't find the key because I left it underneath my Harry Houdini doll. But he has a nasty habit of swallowing those things, you know?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Anyway, so, what are we doing? Oh, I know what we're doing. We're talking about the 12th Doctor, right?
That's right.
Okay, so this insane person, dear audience, that just came in, is the mad woman with a box.
I am the mad woman with a box. Still mad, still a woman, last time I checked. And my box is somewhere over there. Just picture it.
Oh, I thought we... Okay, well, anyway... Oh, no, we can't have a TARDIS in a TARDIS. That causes problems.
Good night last night. You know, we've had TARDISes within TARDISes before. They even did that with a John Pertwee era.
It's a small one. It's a very small one.
No, no, no.
Corsair said I could have one as long as it was under 6 inches.
No. We're going to talk about that.
Oh, man.
Okay. If you're done there, Marcia, I'll kind of give you guys my take on it.
Sure.
It started out really promising, and the dinosaur spitting out the TARDIS was pretty damn funny. His level of confusion, I completely expected, because it's a regeneration story. Mm-hmm. I think they overplayed it a little too much about, you know, mistaking Strax for Clara. And, you know, he just was a little way too confused. That was hysterical how Vastra knocked him out. Ass over tea kettle. Well, Doctor, I'm having trouble sleeping. They do the mind thing, and bam, he's out. That was funny. Though, them putting that little sound effect in really did kind of over the top of...
Bong!
Yes. Yeah, that was a, you know, I expect that on a comedy, not Doctor Who.
I'll forgive that. It was funny.
It was, yeah, it was funny.
It was worth it.
But I missed clearly like 90% of his dialogue because the sound quality, excuse me, as I mentioned before, it was so bad. It was so poorly mixed. Sound effects and background music were way too loud. He was too soft. He was muttering. I'm amazed I got the Pudding Brains reference. Seriously. I had read that it was supposed to have been Matt Smith who left the message for Clara to come to the restaurant. But from what you guys are saying, it doesn't sound like that was clarified at all.
Not that I saw.
Clarified. No.
Ba-dum-bums.
But.
Yeah, no. Clara asks at the end, so who put the ad in the paper?
Yeah, so.
And he asks her.
Who gave you the phone number?
So even the media is confused because that's like the second glaring error. The first one I read was somebody out there who wrote an article, and it was the one about Clara is theoretically leaving the series, and the BBC was already planning her exit. She announced she was leaving Doctor Who. And whatever clown wrote this article doesn't know his facts because he said she's the longest-running companion.
Yeah.
I mean, they must have completely been asleep the entire three or four years that Amy and Rory were on board.
That puts this whole article in question for me.
Yes, you are no longer valid as a person who checks your facts, you know. So, I wanted to watch the episode again because I had such a terrible time understanding him. And it's not because he's a new doctor. It's not because I'm rejecting him because of that. I think he was so, and I thought this before last night, I thought he was so overhyped that I was afraid he was going to disappoint me. And it wasn't him that disappointed me. It was some of the things you mentioned, because, yeah, they seemed a little bit rehashed, but only in retrospective. At the time, I didn't sit there and think, you know, what's going on? Oh, that's terrible. Because I did call it about Girl in the Fireplace. I caught that before anybody, which usually I'm the last man in the room to get the joke. So I'm surprised I caught that. But it was just, the sound was crap. And I was not swept up in the story. It was not awesome. Like that article I sent you. And my sister and her daughter thought the same thing.
It was no 11th Hour.
No.
That one's a hard one to top, though.
But there was
is.
But there were certain hallmarks of the 11th Hour that could have been included in this episode that were not. We didn't have a clear moment where the Doctor coalesced and really became the 12th Doctor for us. Matt Smith gave us that in spades.
Oh, not just that. I hate to interrupt you here, but not just that.
No, no worries.
But, Marsha, I don't know if you caught this, too. We were robbed of getting to see him change his outfit. Which is usually a big deal and a big hallmark of a new doctor. You know, getting his duds. I mean, come on. Paul McGann had a big deal of it. And even David Tennant had a bit where
we saw him in the closet, you know?
But it wasn't, I mean,
he was in the closet for like 20 seconds, but we saw it.
We still had that moment where it like a clear mark of saying, okay, here comes your new doctor.
Yeah.
And we didn't get that. There was no...
Because it's important to humans for some dumb reason. But, you know, and Capaldi only got a throwaway line of, oh, don't want to scarf too long, or whatever. He rambled.
Yeah.
You know, I'm lucky I was a miracle. I caught that.
Yeah, he was talking about, you know, I need to find some new clothes. And, you know, at the end, he just had the suit. What do you think?
I wonder
if that
was
enough. I mean, we saw him in the suit. We now know what he's going to wear.
Well, again, finding the costume, it's a cue for transitioning from, okay, we're having wacky doctor, I don't know who I am time, and we're moving from that transition or transitory period into this is your new doctor. We didn't really get that. So we kind of left the episode still not really sure who the new doctor is.
And
well, he's not sure who the new doctor is.
Well, no, because at the end, I did actually get a definite feel when he and Clara end up, I don't remember where it was, but when he steps out of the TARDIS and asks her, are you coming? That, to me, my first impression was, You're together. Your head just cleared. Did anybody else get that impression?
Well, I got the impression he has head cleared, but he's still asking her if he's accepted.
But for him, that was more an identity issue with her. With,
yes.
Do you still see me as your doctor? Because I'm still in here.
And when she came up close to him and was looking at him, that reminded me of what Vastra said about looking through the veil.
A little bit, yeah.
Now, because he was saying, see me. I want you to see me. And that was a whole looking through the veil thing.
And you know, actually in that article, and I don't know if you read this, Marcia, but the article that my sister sent me said, yeah, isn't that funny that this woman that's followed him through every single regeneration suddenly can't accept a new face?
Yes, that bothered me.
That was a problem.
Yeah, but she's now just a human. She isn't that special being.
It doesn't matter. She still had the same. She had the experience.
No, but you see, she every time she had the experience of knowing the doctor, she didn't remember it from the time before.
Okay, so I missed
this
something.
This is new to her.
That's just when she went into his timeline. She split apart. That was a dozen different Claras. Each,
okay.
In other words, Oswin Oswald did not know Clara Oswin Oswald did not know Clara Oswald.
Okay,
right.
Okay. That,
so to her, it is new.
That'll buy that for a dollar. That makes sense then.
I'll give you the dollar.
Yeah. But I actually liked that she didn't trust him. She kept denying him. I liked the tension that Vastra didn't accept her because she's not looking beyond, you know, the veil. How is Clara going to accept, you know, working with Vastra? She can't even accept her own doctor. That was a nice parallel there.
Nice.
Well, and what I also like too is they kind of knocked out the romantic side of it.
Yeah.
Like at the beginning, it was like Vastra's like, oh, so he's not your boyfriend anymore, and Clara's like, you know, the hell with you. I don't have a problem with him being older and stuff. It's just he's not my doctor anymore. And I think part of her problem, too, is the fact that he has a new face, but it's an older face. She just saw this man die of old age, and the fact that he regenerated with an older face, I think that scares her a little bit based on how she saw his last regeneration end.
Yeah.
Well, you see, this
that would make sense.
This is the progression of television in general and Doctor Who, too, where we're more real these days.
Yeah.
For example, when Sarah Jane, she started with John Pertwee, and then he becomes Tom Baker, the emphasis on the show wasn't her adjusting. She adjusted pretty quickly because we didn't think that deep. Just like with School Reunion. Up until School Reunion, you never thought, what happens to a companion after they leave? And that went into the whole depth of the whole companion issue and when they leave and why the doctor leaves them. And so now we're getting this comparison where a person you know just completely changed. How do you relate to that? You know, it's similar to, it's not unknown in human relationships. You know, you have a boyfriend, he goes off to war, he comes back changed from that experience. He's a different person. How do you relate to that?
Yeah.
That's what she's going through.
That's a good parallel.
Yeah.
Or worse, they come back scarred or disfigured or lost a limb.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that? How do parents deal with their kids coming out of the closet? They can't.
Yeah, and they boil it down, you know, you lost your boyfriend. I didn't lose my boyfriend. I have no problem with his age. It's the fact that I lost somebody I know. This new face, this new person.
Yeah.
This is not the doctor.
It's a new body. It's a new personality. You wonder, is he still in there? Because it's not acting like he is. And Moffat did say the doctor is going to be more alien this time around. And that's going to cause a conflict. If they keep that, I'm going to like that. But, Marcia, I'm on the same page with you. I think, you know, this mysterious woman business, yeah, it's been done to death. You know, why does he have to have that in the background? You know, it's kind of...
He's Moffat.
No.
I'm not saying it as a building relationship.
Well, for Matt Smith, it was important. Because he was really pining the loss of Amy. He needed a puzzle to solve...
But Amy was a puzzle to solve in the first place.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
it only took her long because
she was before River. Well, except for the library.
Well, you know, I don't think she really was a puzzle because it felt like by the time we got to the Big Bang, the Doctor had known all along. He just didn't know that he knew. The whole thing of, you know, I saw. What did I see? I'm so disorganized. I don't know what I know. But it felt like he knew all along. He just needed to get her to that moment. That's why he brought her aside. You know, where's your mom and dad? Where did they go? That's why I brought you with me. You've asked me that before, and now I'm finally telling you.
Okay, well, yeah, but I think we're getting a little off the track here. let's go ahead and get everyone else's opinion here. I'm not taking too much time. So, Mad Woman, what did you think?
I enjoyed the episode. It had some great moments, but it was lacking a lot of necessary points, I thought, for a new Doctor coming in. I don't think they marked his regeneration issues very well. I mean, they didn't really say a lot about it. Somebody new coming in might not really have understood what was going on. When we had the 11th Hour, they had throwaway lines like, I'm not ready, I'm not done yet, I'm still cooking.
I loved that.
Yeah, still cooking was good.
That was so his personality in two simple sentences.
Well, also, as a newbie coming in, I understood that. He's not done cooking. That's a regeneration. Oh, okay, so he's, like, acting weird for this reason. We didn't see that with this episode. So, like I said, a new fan coming in might not have really understood what was happening. We didn't get a solid transition from wackiness to here's your new Doctor. By the end of the episode, I still wasn't totally sure who 12 was, and that bothered me. You know, the sound issues, too, kind of bugged me a little bit. I didn't actually watch most of Series 5, like the first one, on BBC America. I watched it online, and so the sound was good for me, but every time I turned on BBC America, I had that problem where, you know, I missed certain bits.
Thank you, it's not just me.
It's not. I really think it's BBC America. I think it's something to do with, you know, the way it's coming through the TV. I don't even know, but yeah. I highly recommend trying to find it online to watch the British version and see if that helps.
There could be technological compression problems. And
maybe.
And it's an issue.
Well, they're still on a PAL format, aren't they?
Well, no, the issue is the high-def TV and compressing the signal. I know, Leo Laporte figured it all out and explained. I can't do it to him. But sometimes you have to adjust your television in order to get the loafers and tweeters and all that.
Maybe.
Because when you compress the signal, you lose the highs being very high and the lows being very low.
It's possible. Well, overall, like I said, for an episode of Doctor Who, I enjoyed it a lot. But for the 12th Doctor's first episode, I was disappointed in certain respects, and I really feel like, you know,
nothing stood out.
Yeah, you know.
So what about the woman in the end, you know? And
it should have felt like a debut, and it didn't. It just felt like another episode of Doctor Who. And that's the way that Matt Smith's departure felt, too. And that was my core problem with it. And so, you know, Matt going out, Peter Capaldi coming in, they were good episodes of Doctor Who as episodes of Doctor Who, but as a departure and an arrival, I felt a little bit cheated.
Okay. Okay.
So solid episodes by themselves, but just for what they were supposed to be, I wasn't happy.
Okay. So, Awful Husband, what do you think?
First of all, overall, I thought it was a good episode. It wasn't like the 11th Hour, which is very hard to top in my book.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a good episode, so I agree with you there, Mad Woman. But I thought it had a lot of good moments. And you were talking about Clara saying, he's not my boyfriend. Did you notice there was a bookend to that at the end of the episode where the doctor's saying, I made a lot of mistakes, and he says, I'm not your boyfriend, and he goes, that's not my mistake. That's not your mistake.
I caught that.
In other words, Matt Smith is starting to treat her like a girlfriend.
I liked that. I caught that.
And so now, and like he's saying, it's like I'm trying to tell myself something. So it's like,
did you catch that line, Marcia?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did see that, and I thought that was very, very cool.
So to me, that's like Moffat writing.
That ties in the old the 11th Doctor.
Moffat writing. I gotta say it, because like, Moffat is my guru. I love his writing. We just had seen the Day of the Doctor, and to me, that's like the ultimate Moffat episode. He is the master of timey-wimey. Because if you look at it, there are so many things back and forth in timey, and it all works. It all makes sense.
Yeah.
So anyway, but the thing with Moffat writing is, you were talking, when I was back in the hallway, I heard you talking about him being in the alley and going through the junk and everything. And he does one piece where he's talking about his eyebrows, or angry eyebrows. They look like they're independent of his face.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Coupling, which was a sitcom Moffat did years ago?
I've never seen
it. It was a comedy, and it was like...
There was a character named Jeff who would always come up with these crazy things. He had the giggle loop. And the idea of the giggle loop is, you know, it's a situation that's serious and nobody's supposed to laugh. So because you're not supposed to laugh, you start thinking it'd be funny if somebody laughed.
Yeah.
So then you start almost laughing.
Yeah.
So the harder you hold it to try not to laugh, the more you want to laugh. That was the kind of crazy things.
Yeah.
And the eyebrows, to me, screamed a Jeffism.
Yeah.
But it fit, and it's not like it's out of the Doctor Who universe, but you could see that kind of comedic writing
that
Moffat did for four seasons.
Yeah, the rambling was cute.
He was using it there.
Yeah.
So I like that. Yeah, I like the scene between Vastra and Clara, where it's like Vastra's upset with her that she's not accepting the Doctor, because she's seen other generations of his.
Yeah.
So she's used to it, she understands, and Clara's not. And like I was saying earlier, it's a more realistic. This person you've been traveling with suddenly changes, and you don't know who he is. Now, when Rose went through it, he went from a darker Doctor to a more friendlier one and a more attractive one, which led to a different relationship. So it's kind of a positive change. With this one, Clara doesn't know that's positive. He's older. He might be meaner. He looks meaner.
And you know, this is interesting that you bring that up, because, and I don't know where it is I picked it up, and maybe it was just an interview with Moffat, but Eccleston, when he changed into Tennant, and this has been throughout a lot of the classic and the new, and it's been in the new adventures, it's been the big finishes, the Doctor's appearance changes are influenced by his companions. They said Davison's regeneration was so young because his companions were young. They kind of intonated the same thing with Tennant, is that he regenerated into a more physically pleasing appearance for Rose. They really hammered on the appearance. And Vastra did say his changes are based on, you know, being with you.
Yes.
So that's interesting, because that's something I want to see is, okay, what is it about this new physicality of the Doctor that is something that is compatible to Clara? She doesn't even know yet, because she's still in that state of rejection and almost shock.
Well,
I think
compatibility may not be the problem. Because there was a line in that in the alley where he says, it's like I'm trying to tell myself something.
I caught that.
And yeah. I think what he's trying to tell himself is he's seen a little too close to his companions. I mean,
maybe
one of the tenets of Doctor Who is that there's no hanky-panky in the TARDIS. And I think he was starting to get a little too close to that, starting with Rose. And
the flirting.
Amelia Pond, it wasn't a romantic relationship because Rory was there.
Yeah.
But there were
but it was times, emotional.
There was emotional connection, and, well, Amy did kiss him when they first met and all that.
Yeah.
And it's,
yeah.
But so I think what he's trying to tell himself is, I am an alien, and I have to have a distance between me and my companion.
I'm not sure it's that, or...
Nice theory.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's that, but I don't know what you think maybe about this, Marcia, is that I think it might tie into why he looks so much like the father from Fires of Pompeii.
That's what I got from it. For me, it was a lot more simplistic. I'm trying to tell myself something. We're going to find out in the Pompeii episode.
Yeah. Marsh, did you say yes to that?
Yes, I did.
That's okay.
That's exactly what I think.
Yeah. Okay.
I would love to see it also tie into the character, Frobisher, that he played in Children of Earth as well. I don't know if they'll go that far.
Yeah.
For me, I have heard that he's going to tie it in. For me, he doesn't have to. I mean, as fans, we know it's the same actor, and I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm never going to say, oh, he looks like that guy.
Well, no. Doctor Who has a long and storied tradition of double-casting actors.
Colin Baker
was
a guard in the episode before he became the Doctor.
And Karen Gillan was a seer in Fires of Pompeii.
Yeah.
But we all know, I mean,
and Martha.
We all know that, especially in England, it's a smaller, BBC is a smaller production company studio.
A smaller pool of actors.
The actors end up in everything. And so there's TV shows, and they're on plays, and they're on radio.
Oh, you have no idea until you've read the show notes behind all of the big finishes. Because all the big finishes, they are even more integrated in. I mean, it's practically inbred. The ties are crazy.
Oh, you know, I actually, I've been talking to a new friend I've made online recently, where Katie Manning actually played, I think, a time lady in one of the big finishes, Iris Wildthyme.
Yes, she did.
Yeah.
And very funny. I liked her a lot.
Oh, Iris is a recurring character. She's funny.
Yeah, I want to check out some of her stuff now.
Her TARDIS looks like a bus.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, and she's got a bit of a toot on her.
Her first episode is with the Fifth Doctor, and then she does one with Colin Baker, and he's like, oh no, not her again. She is a hoot. And Marcia, have you ever heard any of the Wild Times?
I have not listened to any of the Irish Wild Times, but I have one online friend who is head over heels about Iris.
If you want a good laugh, she's funny. If you're in the mood for a good laugh, check it out. She's like a drunken partying time lord.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to hit you guys up one of these days to listen to some of the Iris stories, because after talking to a friend of mine online, it's like I want to check her out, man.
Yeah, yeah.
When I heard Katie Manning played her, I was like, I need to hear this, man. Yeah, because I love Katie.
Oh, yeah, I'll play you one. So okay, well. This has been interesting.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm not done yet.
Oh, okay.
I have one more thing.
Oh, okay. Go for it.
And I was waiting to see if anybody else would mention this thought, and nobody has. I think the great and almighty Moffat is showing us something that we're going to see in the future, and he snuck it in right in front of our eyes.
Really? No.
Like what? Yes. What?
Well, the whole issue of who sent the message, right?
Yeah.
Who put the message in the paper? In the end, when they're in back of the TARDIS, the Doctor mentions something about a woman putting it in. And Clara looks at the TARDIS column.
I didn't catch that. Yes. About a woman putting it in.
Yes. Now.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the woman, is that the woman in the shop reference?
Well, hang on. Let me keep going. Okay, so you have that, right? And then you have that epilogue where the cyborg / robot, whatever you want to call him, he ends up in heaven, his heaven, the promised land that he was looking for. With the woman there, right?
Yeah.
Who's the woman? Think about it.
She called herself Missy, but...
Think about it. Oh, you've met my boyfriend. He's hard to get along with. Or whether, I'm
you don't think it's like you don't think it's like River Regenerated?
No, no. Keep going.
Think it's the Ronnie?
No, keep going.
No, they're not, he's not going to...
Hot?
You think it's the TARDIS?
Yes. I think it's the TARDIS. Because remember, he's still a cyborg, a robot.
Yeah.
So I think the TARDIS transferred his program, his intelligence, his programming, into herself, giving him the promised land.
Why would she do that?
Very much like when Dr. Moon, saved all the people in the library.
Maybe, although I got more an impression from her that we're looking at a future villain.
No, what I get the impression is we're going to see the TARDIS be a character, be more active.
You know, that would be cool, and actually that would fit with her saying my boyfriend.
Yes.
It would.
That's what clued me in.
Yeah, and they've done that in a couple of big finishes.
We see her as Idris.
Yeah.
Fans from the original series always had the idea that the TARDIS doesn't always take him where he wants to go, but where he needs to go. And I think we're going to see a more active character of a TARDIS.
I'm going to postulate a theory, and if I'm right about it, then I will win at Doctor Who. I will agree with you that Missy is the TARDIS.
Yes.
But I'm going to stick to my guns and say that somehow, some way, we'll see the TARDIS in form of Missy, but the TARDIS will be the villain of the season.
I won't rule that out. I don't think so, but I won't rule that out.
It's a theory I have, because it could be really interesting, and it kind of makes sense in my brain. This is my theory I'm putting out. I'm going to hold myself accountable to it. If I'm right, I will win at Internet and Doctor Who, but that is my theory for this season.
We will remember this moment, your theory, and at the end of the season, we will compare notes.
You know what might add some validity to that is the fact that the TARDISes exist in past, present, future all at the same time. And at the end of the Matt Smith era, you go in and you see that tangle of his timelines, and Clara goes in there and rips that to shreds. I mean, that could have thrown her for a loop.
Yeah, and the fact that he went to the one place no time traveler's ever supposed to go.
He always does that.
But you're never supposed to visit your own grave, and he took the TARDIS there. And there's also the fact that the TARDIS has been in a human body, has had a chance to interact with the Doctor. What if she's become somehow bitter? Or what if she has become corrupted
okay.
by
the what disease? Do you think, Marcia? Do you think that the TARDIS had a nervous breakdown seeing her own death?
I'm skeptical.
I think it could be cool. I think it could be interesting.
I don't think, personally, I don't think the TARDIS is going to be the villain, because the TARDIS and the Doctor have always been together, but I do think she's going to be more active.
That's why I think it could be more like a nervous breakdown.
I don't think we haven't seen the villain yet, or we haven't clued in to the villain yet. I don't think the TARDIS is going to be it, but I do think she's going to be more active.
Well, I don't think she's going to be like permanently twisty. I think something happened to her to make her villainous, and then you know the Doctor will fix it and she'll be fine again.
Mm. Well, Marcia, what do you think of all this insanity?
I'm skeptical. I like the thought process that you had, Dennis, of your hypothesis about who Missy actually is. That fits, but it part of me doesn't think that it's going to go that way. I'm not sure why, but there's something in me that's balking at that.
Okay, well.
And I do think that Missy is going to recur as the series villain. So that's just the vibe I get off of her. She's here for the long haul. She's going to come back and is going to be the one that's twisting whatever strings are being twisted this season.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have any good counter hypotheses, but something in there isn't sitting right with me, and maybe y'all are completely right, and I'll have to eat my hat next galley. But
well, in 13 episodes, we'll compare notes.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Where it fit, where.
And she does have some kind of a title. She's like Mistress of the Nether Sphere or something like that, which almost sounds like. I mean, I wish Gaiman would come back. Neil Gaiman would come back and write an episode. That would be cool for him to handle.
Remember, she's only called Idris because that was the woman's name who the TARDIS went into.
Yeah.
That's not the TARDIS's name.
No.
So Missy's fine, whatever she wants to call herself.
Well, you know, he probably has some crazy timey-wimey reason for calling her that. You know, maybe he used to say, listen, Missy, you know, and she was taking him somewhere he didn't want to go. Who knows? So, anyway, at this point, we're over an hour.
Are we?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, Marcia and I had to stall for, like, what, 15 minutes or so?
Well, the new episode I was expecting that was going to happen.
Yeah.
So, listeners, stay tuned. Who's right? Who's wrong? Who's going to have to eat their hat or their...
Nom, 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 nom.
Nom, nom, nom.
Pass the salt, please.
Yeah, you better make an edible hat because all bets are off.
One of us is going to eat it.
And especially with Moffat in the house, who the heck knows?
This is true. I'll have to get started on an edible hat. How do we all feel about beef jerky?
I like beef jerky.
Okay, I'll get right on it. Corsair, do you still have that jerky stash from that plant we went to last week?
Nom, nom, nom.
Hey, they have this thing called a bacon bowl. You can make a bowl out of bacon, so I guess you can make a hat out of bacon.
Nah, let's stick with jerky.
Okay, so, Marcia, you're released from this plethora of insanity. Everybody has great ideas here, and we gave each other, all of us, something to think about. I'm going to go off and try to find a universal translator for this freaking episode. Or, it's like I said, Capaldi talks a little too soft, and somebody's asleep at the switch. Okay, so thank you, Marcia!
Thank you!
We will see you around the Twitterverse.
Alright.
And we will see you at Gallifrey! Yay!
We're going to continue the Facebook page for... however long as Captain John wants to post stuff, so don't write it off as a lost cause. We'll continue to put weird and wonderful things up there.
Sure.
Okay, so take care!
All right.
Bye-bye. Bye!
So, we don't have anything else to talk about except one more important thing.
Yes.
And listeners, I hate to do this to you, but this is our last episode.
Yes.
We have enjoyed doing it. Personal reasons we're having to stop, but it's been a bit too of a lack of feedback from people, and I'm just don't have time or the energy to keep up with this in the way that would elicit feedback. So the Facebook page will stay open for a while, and possibly we might be doing YouTube stuff, but I'm in talks with the station manager about that. He's open to the idea. Again, that's something that's even more labor-intensive, so I don't see that that's going to happen for now. But if it's anything cosplay and really incredibly strange and or Doctor Who, you will find it on the Facebook page. Do a search for Corsair's Closet if you don't belong. I know only 66 of you belong, so there's another few thousand out there that need to join. So join early, join often, join right now.
Yes, if join like you vote.
On Twitter, then follow us at @time_siren for myself and for Madwoman.
You just need to follow me at madwomanwabox. I'm also the same on Tumblr and on Plurk, if you happen to follow that social media site.
And the Awful Husband is becoming an expert in writing. Follow his blog at...
Well, first of all, you can reach me at awfulhusband@kryptonradio.com. That's my email.
And that's A, F as in Frank, O-L. Just think of adult fan of Lego. Take the first letters, bam, that's it.
And I do have a writing blog. Please visit and comment. And that's DennisAmadorCherry.com/blog.
Yes, Amador, A-M-A-D-O-R.
So just reach me there. And please, if you're interested in writing, I try to share everything that I'm learning from writing.
And enjoy.
So.
Yes, and I do have some plans to try and start up a blog of my own, but it's definitely a work in progress. You know, a lot of the personal reasons for us not doing the podcast anymore do come from my camp, about 70%. But I'm still online, still on my Twitter. That's where I'm most active. Trying to get more active on Tumblr again, schedules permitting, and my father's health. But yeah, you know, we're not going anywhere. We're just not able to continue recording the podcast episodes every week. So we will still be reachable on the internet if you want to talk to us, you want to show us really cool stuff, and, you know, we will be there. We may not be, you know, traveling through the galaxy in the Corsair's TARDIS anymore, but we will still be around.
Yes.
And I want to do some writing on different conventions we cover and all that. Yeah. So we'll be around on Krypton Radio in some form or another.
Don't be a stranger, just be strange.
Yes.
And with that, we will see you in time and space. The Corsetteers would like to thank everyone who has been a part of this podcast for the past 3 years. Our recurring guests, Krista and Marcia Franklin. Our former podcasters, Kristen Roach. Our current podcast team of Dennis Amador Cherry is the Awful Husband and NASA Nerd. Liz Carley is the Mad Woman with a Box. And myself, Christine Cherry, also known as the Time Siren. And of course, our wonderful station manager team of Gene Turbo and Susan Fox at KryptonRadio.com. This has been, was, and will be a Krypton Radio production. Please visit www.corsair-closet.com for prior episodes, links to our social network, show notes, email addresses, and blog. Despite our absence on the airwaves, we still always would really love to hear from our fans.